Well, welcome back to the CPC Together podcast. I am very excited, before we get started, to just introduce you quickly to Vince Costa. Him and his wife, Kathy, have been partners with us for a very long time. Kathy was at PBC, which is kind of a sister church of ours, and they've been ministering to Italy since 1975. Their ministry has an emphasis and a purpose to disciple the next generation of Christian leaders in order to spread the gospel in key unreached cities of Italy and beyond. They minister to all kinds of people, but one of the most captivating ministries they work with are refugees. And man, if you sit down in a room with this guy, his laughter, his stories, it is so infectious, and it's so clear that God has his hand all over him in his ministry. And that is why we choose to partner with him at CPC. If you want to learn a little bit more about Vince, you're going to hear some things at the end of the episode on how to get involved with his ministry. You can also go to our website, cpc.org, and find the Missions and Outreach tab and go and check them out there. We encourage you to get involved with these mission partners because, honestly, they're just so great, and they're doing amazing work for the kingdom, and it's work that we all kind of want to get on board with. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Please welcome Vince Costa. You're listening to CPC Together, a podcast produced by Central Peninsula Church in the San Francisco Bay Area, where we talk about pretty much everything. Well, welcome everybody back to the CPC podcast. We are very excited to be in this room right now with a legendary man, Vince Costa.
Oh my, he sounds so old. The legend.
The legend, the man, the myth, the legend. His legend is still continuing. He's not as old as he's talking like he is.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So I thought we would start today by answering this question, if you have one.
Yeah.
Do you have any that would be appropriate to share on the podcast? Any near-death experiences? And maybe we could start with Vince, because you've had so much adventure, I'm guessing, at some point.
I feel like it's a good question to ask a missionary. That's a very good question.
Well, it's like, is it true near death or perceived near death?
Good question.
That's a good clarifier.
I've had a lot of perceived near death where I trembled and I thought I was on my way out.
Yeah.
I think that counts.
That would count.
Those would count.
Yeah.
If they're scary enough to make you think
it was scary. It was scary. Well, you know, I'm from Sicily. I was born in Sicily, on the island of Sicily, and a lot of my ministry has been in Sicily. Mm-hmm. And people ask about the mafia, and I sort of jokingly say, "What mafia? We don't have any mafia." And it's like the whole fiber is mafia mentality, and just a simple thing to go into my mechanic could be something, you know. It's like eye opening, and you walk in and first thing they do, you have a problem with, I don't know, a generator. They pull some wires, and then they say, okay, just wait. And then 2 hours later, you're still waiting for your car to be fixed. But as you're there, you see traffic come by. And I remember one day, which is a common thing, a person comes by selling socks, one pair of socks, €20. And and he comes around to me, other people. I said, I don't need socks. You know, I thought, you know. Like, it's an odd place for him to come.
I don't need 20-year-old socks. But 20 euro, not year old.
Oh.
I thought you said year old. This is such a bizarre
20
story.
Euros.
The mafia these days.
But I don't need that. You know? But the owner, he said, okay, give me 4 or 5 pairs. And I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. He's going to get 4 or 5 pairs, 20 a crack. That's about €100.
For socks.
What kind of socks are they?
Yeah.
And then I moved away to my, and I had a friend close by. I said, this is ridiculous what he's paying for these socks. He goes, shut up. I said, what do you mean? He says, it's not the socks. That's his cover. He says, okay, that's protection.
Oh, so yeah.
I said, what? Well, that's in case the police come by. This guy is actually not paying protection. He's paying for socks.
Yeah.
It just so happened he's paying $20 a pair. But that's his
really
choice.
Yeah, exactly. That's him.
that's his choice.
Yeah. Okay.
So things like that. It's in the fiber. I smile about it. People are not really in danger unless you get involved with their business. You know, if you, unless you touch their business. And
so if you bought the socks, then you could be in danger.
No. But if you get in the way of some way, or if by chance, you know, there's an altercation.
You question $20, yeah, sir, $20
you start
socks.
Questioning and say, what are you doing, whatever.
Just let them sell the socks.
Yeah.
There's wisdom there.
With all this saying, though, I mean, please come to Sicily. Yeah.
If anyone's interested, yeah,
it's
come
really,
on over.
It's really a lovely place, you know, and lovely people. And you wouldn't see this at all. I mean, unless, but you wouldn't. You wouldn't, a tourist treated very nicely. And so you wouldn't get involved with this, you know. And I have never really got involved with it, unless someone like a mechanic and something else. You get the nose from it, you know. It's like, you know when to.
Yep.
Sort of walk away.
Yeah. How long have you been in Sicily?
Well, I was born in Sicily.
Okay.
And then I went back as a young person and. In the 1980, when I got married with Kathy from here, from California, from the Bay Area. And we went there in 1980. And so we spent, it's from 1980 to 1992, when the church was planted in Catania. And then from there, we went to Milan for another 10 years.
Yeah. What do you miss about Sicily? Like when you're not there?
It's home.
Yeah.
You feel like it's, I mean, even just going to a coffee shop.
Yeah.
Getting an espresso, the smell of the coffee shop, and I feel very comfortable. But I also feel comfortable in the States, you know, whether it be the East Coast or the West Coast. But it's like your native tongue, you know. It's like my native culture would be Sicilian, and a native language it would be Sicilian, and then Italian and then English. So it's like where your comfort zone is, and it's just comfort.
Yeah.
What's the food like?
Is the food? My mind went straight there too. I'm like,
well, food.
Talk to us about the food.
As opposed to the north, you know, where they would have sort of white sauces and pasta, and then soups and things, you know, and salads. We have the nice meat. You know, we have lasagna, ravioli, macaroni. We have that heavier cuisine.
Yeah.
Rachel loves beef.
I do.
Yeah.
So good.
In fact, you're never going to guess her nickname.
Those who've listened to the podcast know her nickname.
Her nickname is Chili Beef.
Really? My goodness.
Doesn't she put off Chili Beef vibes?
Yeah.
You have a story then.
Not near death, but for the cows.
It also involves the mafia, actually, strangely.
The butchers. They go after the cows like nothing.
Is there any pasta that you've had in the States that comes close? To what you got in Sicily?
Ideally, somewhere we could go.
Yeah, yes. Particularly somewhere in the Bay Area.
Well, something like sort of, it's a different, well, they have different cuisines, you know, even around here. What do you have? Buco di Beppo?
Okay. And that gets close?
Yeah, to the Sicilian. Sicilian.
Yeah. I would not have thought.
I would not have put Buco
What's
di
heavier?
Beppo
it's a heavier thing.
Yeah.
What they do here in America is the sauces are much heavier than we have in Italy. It's sort of more complicated, more stuff they put in it.
Yeah,
That is more simple, and I think it's more tasty.
Okay,
there's a little place that I found in San Mateo.
Yeah,
called Fiero.
Oh
Cafe.
Yes.
It's oh yeah,
so
I've seen
good,
that.
And it's a little Italian guy that runs it.
He's Sicilian.
Is he Sicilian?
The guy who started it is a friend. His
name know him,
Franco Caruba.
Oh, yeah. Can we go there while you're here? Yeah. Can we go and have lunch there?
But I believe he sold it. He sold that to someone else or to a group.
Darn.
But Franco started that.
It's delicious.
Yes,
I absolutely. Love it. Vince, so you've been on, and I've talked to you a little bit. Like you've been on a crazy journey with God over your life. I don't know, maybe not crazy, but you've been on an adventure.
Serendipitous.
That's good.
But I'm wondering. Where did that start? Where did Jesus come into your life? When was the moment when you said, this is for me?
Well, you have to realize what's marked my life being an immigrant. Mm. I came to the States as a little kid at 8 years old, turned eight, and with my mom and three sisters. Mm. And my dad and my older brother had come to the States a year before, made enough money, and then they called us, you know, the family. And so we ended up being the States. But I didn't know as a little kid. I was 8 years old. I remember having a party the night before at my aunt's house. And a wonderful party, and just a party. But I didn't know it was a going away party.
Wow.
So then the following morning, we got up early in the morning, and we were taken to the port city of Messina. And there, a friend dropped us off, and he just brought us there, and he just took off. And and with my mom four of us, and into a cabin, into the lower sections of the boat. Again, and we were, this was in March 1. Actually, we just celebrated our anniversary yesterday. Mm. From March 1 to March 15th, making the crossing. Wow. From Italy to New York.
Wow.
And it was on the lower level. And I remember leaving the Straits of Gibraltar and seeing the straits on the side as we're crossing them. And then persons on board came by and closed the porthole, you know, as you couldn't see the water. We were just at the waterline. Mm-hmm. So as the crossing in the North Atlantic in March is really wicked.
Yeah.
It's the cheapest too. Mm-hmm. So going there, I remember that. And I remember going up on board twice because of... we were all sick underneath, and there was bad seas. Mm. Coming on the top, breathing some fresh air, and then being on top and seeing the bow of the ship go into the water and back up.
Oh, my gosh.
And the waves, like, over your head when you go down.
Jeez.
Oh. And, but it was fresh air. And, you know, even to this day, when I'm on a boat...
fresh air. Yeah. But the air was nice.
There was an ocean there.
Yeah. I'm terrified of that thought. Yeah.
Oh. But even now, when I go and I make a crossing almost every two, well, four times a year across the Straits of Messina, and when I get on the either hydrofoil or a ferry boat, the smell of the ship, you know, the diesel fuel, with some food, whatever, and it hits me as when I was a little kid. It's like the snapshot.
Wow.
When I was a kid, and so back to. This, my story, it could be, I need to cut this thing down.
No, keep sharing.
So, 8 years old, making the crossing, landed in New York, then from there, taking a train to Boston, and that's when the life really started. And truly, I remember as a little kid asking my parents, you know, what are we doing here? When are we going back home? Wow. And they wouldn't respond. Mm-hmm. There was no answer. Oh. And it could be that they were also thinking, let's see how it goes. So maybe we're going back in months or who knows. But the confusion I had, and really the questions that became sort of key questions to everyone's life, you know, what's it all about? You know, what's my purpose? Yeah. And that question I had right at the beginning when I was 8, 9 years old. And I didn't have a response to that, an answer to that until I went to university. But as an immigrant, you have this thing. See, you're living in a ghetto. And that's why I can identify so much with the refugees that I'm ministering to now. Mm. You know, they have their world, and they're trying to break into your world. Mm. And they just see it like a prison. They just see it and no way coming out unless by the grace of God something miraculous happens. You know, so they're living in a ghetto. Mm. And we were in an Italian ghetto in Boston. And how do you break out of that? And I remember... since I was 8 years old, they put me in the first grade in America. Hmm. So here I am, a little bigger, chubbier, and taller than the rest, and you just stick out. Even though you want to duck down, you can't duck down enough.
Yeah.
But but again, it's okay. So even when you think of, you know, where does God come into this picture? God was into the picture even before I realized it.
Yeah.
Now, as an adult and as a Christian, I look back and see God's sort of sightings at those times, because at those times different people came in that helped little Vinny go from first grade to second to third and just jump a few grades and to sort of be more sort of a noble pace with the other kids. Because my dad's intention was for me to go to work, you know, as a bricklayer or carpenter, whatever, manual labor. That's all we knew. Mm-hmm. That's what was in store until a person stepped in, Mr. Lanieri, you know, an Italian background himself. And he looked at a little kid, and I was pretty smart, you know, with what I was doing. And he says, this little boy should go to school, you know. Mm-hmm. And he talked to my dad. My dad had respect for Mr. Lanieri. And he says, you know what? I think I'll let him go to school. And I think it's a good thing because, you know, five of us were working, my dad, my mom, my older sisters, and my brother, five people working to make ends meet.
Wow.
So, okay, then we can let little Vinny and Maria, my younger sister, go to school. And so by the grace of God, by this man's intervention, I was able to go to school and then finish high school.
Yeah.
Go to college. Still the same question. And in my back of the mind is when I get to that point or being like the others, you know, like Americans, you know, then that's when I've made it. And when I find the peace, you know, that in my own heart and that sense of purpose. Well, I get to graduate from university in Boston, Northeastern University Engineering. And fortunately, I was able to work at a MIT Draper Labs research lab for MIT at the time when we had the Apollo project. And I was working on a submarine project for the Navy. But I was just a junior engineer. But to me, that was the goal. I'm like the other people around me, my age. And okay, I've made it, but there's no peace. There's, you know, something is lacking. You know, it's like I'm like the others around me. And as I look at their lives, they're not happy either.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, wait a minute, then what are we doing?
Yeah.
So from the senior guys, engineer says, Vince, you've made it. Now you just have to work hard, you know, and just keep on doing what you're doing. And in 10 years, 20 years, you'll be a senior engineer. And this is our pathway, you know. And I thought, but I'm not happy. I mean, I have the career, I have the name, I have the fame, whatever. But this is not what, you know, it's not responding it's to my heart. I'm still having nightmares at night, you know, as a little kid and fears. And they said, well, you know, it's like, but this is what it's about. And I thought, this is a hoax. This is a real joke. You know, then this is what life's about. You know, so fortunately or unfortunately, I think it's fortunately that I said, I'm not in it. I'm not going to wait another 10 years to find out. I mean, I'm going to stop right here.
Yeah.
And what we had at that time, which is like after Vietnam War, I also bypassed the Vietnam War. I went into the lottery, and fortunately, I didn't go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I was able to finish school, but at that point, we all having identity crises. If you look at the history of that, a lot of people were just bombed out by the social upheaval, and then I was part of that. But mine was a personal story, you know, had to do with my background. The others were with Vietnam and social upheaval that was at that time, marches.
Yeah.
I remember going to march, you know, and I didn't know what I was doing. I just got on a march. I was marching with everyone else.
Yeah.
And, but during that time, you know, talking to other people about, you know, what life's about, they all had different answers. But a number of them went back to their religion. So one of the engineers was a Jehovah's Witness, said, you know, come with me. This is what you need. He introduced me to the Bible. The first time I read the Bible was with a Jehovah's Witness and starting in Genesis. But it didn't sit right. You know, I didn't have any peace about that. So came back, and Saul, another engineer, was a Mormon. He says, Vince, you have the wrong material. And so he gave me some material in the family. I remember it was good. But still, it wasn't, you know, it's not for me. My director was a Jewish. He said, well, let's meet the rabbi. I'll bring you to see the rabbi. I'm becoming more and more aware, you know, that I'm an oddball.
It's like having all these spiritual directors.
Warmer.
There's nothing that's going to fit, you know.
Yeah.
But at the end, not the end, but as it goes forth, one of the engineers comes to me and says, Vince, can I talk to you? And I said, yeah, let's have lunch, and then we'll go by the Charles River, which is, you know, Boston is divided, is sort of a river, divides Cambridge from Massachusetts, from Boston.
Yeah.
And in front of the Rotunda, the library at MIT, we were there, and he says, you know what, you're looking at all the wrong places. if you would consider Jesus Christ and giving your life over to Jesus. And I thought, Jesus Christ, as a Catholic, I said, he's dead.
Oh.
You know, and yeah. I said, what do you mean? I mean, Jesus Christ. Yeah. He says, no, he's not dead. You know, they told you it was wrong. He's alive. And he says, if you would give your life to him, he said, you will see how he's going to respond to your needs, your heart.
Wow.
And I thought, what do I have to lose?
Wow. Mm.
So I prayed with him, followed his prayer. And then at the end, he hugged me with tears. Yeah. An older man, about 20 years older, and he hugged me. And I thought, boy, you know, it's like he thinks I've done something great. But I wasn't expecting anything. I was just doing something he said, and I don't know how it was going to come about.
Yeah.
But you know what? 2 weeks later, and I called him up, and I said, hey, now what do I do? You know, it's like I had that prayer. Nothing has changed. He goes, oh, you know, Vince, you need to be followed by other folks. He says, I can't do it. I'm in New Hampshire. But look up this church, and it's called Park Street Church in Boston. So I didn't know. I mean, from a Catholic world, I didn't know any of the Protestant churches. So I went to the Yellow Pages. Where is it located? And lo and behold, it's in the center of the city. I walk in May of 1973. I came to Christ May 10th at 12:12 along the Charles River. Gave my life to Christ. And then that same month, we went to that church, Park Street Church, during a missionary conference.
Oh, wow.
You know, and flags flying, the whole thing. And I asked, does anybody know about Jesus? Can I find out more? And they looked at me like weird.
Hey, does anybody in here know anything about
this church?
Jesus?
Know anything about Jesus?
And they looked at me like, no one's talked to you? No one's brought you here? I said, no, I just want to know more about Jesus.
This is the time, church. This is the T-ball. It's the softball.
And so they brought me to some guys, engineering, and a group of engineers. And I started tracking with them. And May of 74, a year later, another missionary conference, there was a call by an engineer from Kenya for a clean water project. You know, 11 of us stood up to go to Kenya.
Wow.
And we got together, and then he said, you know, he was not feeling well. He had to do some checkups, whatever, but we can't leave right now. But, you know, it's good to have your names. And in maybe 6 months, a year, 2 years, then we can go over. Yeah, I thought, but I'm ready to go. See, once I understood my relationship with Christ, even just at the beginnings, it felt a peace in my heart. You know, it's like, now what do I do? Is it engineering? I didn't feel comfortable in engineering. It's it wasn't appealing any longer. You know, and
it lost its shine.
It did. It just I was thinking what, and basically, and I was there during the Apollo 13. You know, shooting for the moon and the whole thing. And something in my mind was I could do something bigger by joining with God.
Wow.
Something eternal. It isn't just temporal. And which was fascinating to me, you know, doing something with the eternal consequences. And I thought that was more exciting.
Wow. Yeah.
So
that's beautiful.
I wanted to go, and I said, well, if you want to go, this is during missionary conference, and there was missionaries looking for people to go on a short-term mission project to Rome. And it's leaving, you know, next April. And I said, okay, and how long is it going to be for? You know, 2 years. Okay, 2 years, a project for 2 years. You know, then we'll see what happens after that. So I was off.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. Yeah.
So you went for 2 years.
2 years.
Just dropped everything you were doing.
Wow. Yeah.
And then part of the team met my future wife, Kathy, who came from Palo Alto, from PBC.
Yeah.
And we were there working together in this church plant. And the Lord blessed it. And at the end of the work, one of the directors says, you know, this thing's been a success. And we can see us doing this around, you know, for the evangelical world. What he had in mind is doing the same thing that the Mormons had done or were doing, sending young people out to the field for 2 years.
We
didn't have a program like that at the evangelical church. And he thought this could be it. So we need a leader. So we want you to consider being our, you know, future leaders of another project. And, we were looking at each other, both Kathy and myself. And he says, but wait a minute, just a question. Do you guys want to get married or are you single? And I said, no. I said, I'd like to get married.
Yeah. Well, now that it's on the table, Kathy, yeah, I think I'd really like that.
Have a family, some sex.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I would like to get married. And you can cut the other thing out, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, sure.
And Kathy said, no, I'd like to have a family and be married. He said, okay, then stop. Go home, get married, and then after you get married, then talk to me about it.
So
as we were walking out, I turned to Kathy. I said, you know what?
Yeah.
Why don't we start dating? And who knows?
Maybe it's us.
Maybe God's calling us. You know, we both want to be in the project. We both love it. You know, what we've seen. And 2 years is not, you know, that project would have been 4 years.
Yeah.
But it's not the project. And when we start dating. So we started dating. In October. By Christmas, she comes to the team and says, you know, I prayed about it. The team knew that the question posed by the director, and then we were dating for a purpose to find out if we were meant one for the other. Mm-hmm. And Christmas time, she announced to the team that God's shown her that I'm the man for her life and all that, all hugs, you know.
Yeah.
And then said, okay, Vince, and you, of course, are. And I said, look, I just need more time. He said, what? You need more time. I said, yeah, you know, so, okay, all right, well, let's pray for Vince. He needs more time. So I wait, and then February 6th, one of our leaders comes to me and goes, Vince, the team is waiting. We've been praying for you.
Holding up the trip,
yeah,
Vince.
Yeah. We gave you time, but the time is up. You're ready to go.
We've been praying for you.
The Lord spoke to us.
You know, is she the gal for your life? Is she your future wife or not? I said, I don't know. You stop it. You can't do that. Is she is or she's not? You know, you pulled the string a little too long. Mm-hmm. And he says, if she's not, you know, release her today or in this next few days.
Wow.
And I thought, oh my goodness. So I don't know. Let me pray. And I thought of Gideon. You know, let me just. This is in Rome, and I walked out of after lunch. I went outside into it. It was a field nearby where we were living, and I had this question. I'm looking at the sky. Lord, you know, God, what am I to do? And I liked her. You could say I loved her, but I was so afraid. Mm. You know. Like, I'd be the first one out of my culture, out of my tribe, to marry outside, you know, having interracial marriage and with an American. Mm. And I thought, but she's an American. And what comes to mind is stupid things like she loved hamburgers, and she really didn't know how to cook that well. And I'm thinking, I'm going to die if I marry her. It's just a sort of stupid thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Hey, you're getting practical, man.
Yeah, I'm getting really practical. Can I eat hamburgers every day? I don't think I can. And also the big thing of, you know, marrying out of my culture. So I'm there. I say, Lord, give me a sign, please. Very simple. In a big arcobaleno, a rainbow. Mm. Appeared in the sky, really vivid colors, and I'm looking around. Mm. That's a sign. Is it my sign?
And is that for somebody else?
Some other guys down the way.
Like, yes!
He's also praying. Yeah.
So
he's selling socks. Actually, he's like, send a rainbow to who I should send socks to. Yeah.
So at that point, I said, Lord, I need another sign. I mean, I wasn't convinced. So another sign, and I'm waiting, and then there's a huge downpour, soaking wet. Running out. But I knew it's like, you know, she's the one. So later that day, I took her out to the Trevi Fountain in Rome, proposed to her at the fountain.
That's a good spot.
There we go.
From there, we came back. We're married in Palo Alto. PBC in August. August. And then 2 weeks later, I went to seminary because the mission said, Vince, you're an engineer, but people coming on board are going to be college graduates, you know, Bible school graduates, seminary graduates. So you need something to, you know, show them that you're really credible. So I went to...
That you know more than just launching spaceships to the moon.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it's you need some credentials. And so I went to Gordon Conwell and got an MDiv. And then upon finishing that, we're back on the field. And then our career in Italy sort of took off as a couple. And the Lord blessed us with a church in Catania that was planted. Mm. And then we also planted another church with our team in Syracuse. Mm. And so the Lord had blessed us with different efforts. We went to Milan and with a team that was formed for the North. And during that time, Kathy got sick. And she almost died, but miraculously, God saved her. Mm. Kathy has had a problem with endometriosis, all her life, to the point that she couldn't have children. And they told us she couldn't have children, so we adopted our first child, which is Katie. And 12 years later, as we're waiting to adopt another child, Kathy gets pregnant.
Wow.
Okay,
wow.
So two miracles.
Yeah.
One from adoption, one from biological.
Yeah.
But I say that, so in... While we're in Milan, she has some stomach aches. We thought it was a food poisoning, which you think is always food poisoning in Italy when you have a stomach ache. And we take her to the hospital, and fortunately it was on a Sunday, and there wasn't much traffic. And they said, you know what? There's something going on. They did a initial examination. And he says, but I think she'd stay overnight if you could. So you'd be sort of first in line in the morning on Monday, and we can go from there. And so we looked at each other, the kids, the two girls. I said, I'll take care of the girls. You can stay. Fortunately, that night, as they were having the last rounds, and they looked at her, and they said, there's some infection. We don't know what it's causing it from. But we started antibiotics immediately. And a few days later, they had an operation. She had a burst appendix.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Which could have been deadly.
Wow.
And except for the endometriosis.
Mm.
Endometriosis causes what is called like chocolate cysts in the stomach lining over the and what that happened is as the appendix burst, it burst into the cysts, and the cysts covered it and absorbed it without going into the stomach area being fatal.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's incredible.
So we came back home. We're here, and then from that, she had a low grade fever that the doctors didn't know what was going on. So we came back home to CPC. We were here for 2 years, and then after 2 years, the doctors came back and said, we can't find out what it's coming from. They've tested for all the weird diseases, and nothing came up.
So she had a fever for 2 years.
Yeah, low grade fever.
Wow.
And so. We're waiting basically for something either to go away by itself or something else to come up, which would indicate what an issue is. But in the meantime, go up about your life. So the church released us, CPC, released us to go back to the field. And so we went to the field in 2002. And then we came back home in 2007 because the girls' education, during that time when Kathy was sick, we came back to the States. And the question is, what are you going to do with your education? So we started with doing homeschooling. Mm. If she didn't have that problem, we would have stayed in Italy, and the girls would have grown up in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that, we switched them over to the American school system. And so means we're preparing them for the U.S. And not for Italy.
Mm.
So when the kids were coming back, my younger one, Christina, said, Dad, isn't it about time we just go home and basically you come back and... Her sister was launched into university and said, you can do the same thing as your sister. She says, I don't want to. I don't want to go where she is. Mm. And she wanted to go to community college and take it easy. And she wanted the family to be there. So we made a hard decision and said, okay. So that sort of brings our ministry to the end. So, but I had some projects I was trying to finish with the church. And so we came home in 2007 and I started traveling back and forth, and thinking I was going to finish, but I was trying to, as I was seeking to close up ministry projects, they were opening up, more things were happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then with a confirmation from our supporters and churches, is that Vince, if you can handle this, we're behind you. And so we kept on doing this from 2007 till the present.
Staying sometimes here, going over
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. Kathy doesn't travel much with me because of her physical problem with her back, that she's had a back problem since she was like 20, 20.
But, you know, Vince, I love, you know, one of the themes I keep hearing in your story is this theme of like searching. Mm. You know, like as an immigrant, you were searching for where you belonged in the United States. You were searching for meaning. You were searching for the Lord. Like, I'm just wondering how much of that, you know, as you minister to immigrants and refugees, like, do those themes play out in the people you're ministering to? Like, what, you know, I don't know if you can share a little bit of that intersection between your own searching and the people that you minister to and how those kind of intersect.
Yeah, it's, and you know, it's sort of, you come around. When I stood up in that church in Boston to go to Kenya, was working with Muslim. Mm. Now here it is, like 40, 50 years later in Sicily, and Muslims are coming to us.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And from North Africa.
Yeah.
And it's interesting as that we're making the change from in our family from coming to the States. Also, there was things changing in the church, and friends were coming to our church who wanted to focus on the refugees. Okay, so that was happening at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so going back to the refugee ministry, it's something that I have an affinity for. Mm. You can read books about refugees, immigrants, and their, you know, their historical progressions and evolution and things. I've lived it. So you don't. I don't need to read books. When I see the refugees come from whatever nation, and you have an affinity and identification with them, they become so natural.
Yeah.
And I also need to watch out and that you identify too much, because it could be that what's coming out of, onto the surface is your own feelings. You know, you're sort of projecting on them some of what you went through.
Yeah.
You know, so that's
kind of like we do as parents a little bit to our kids.
Yeah.
So that's always a question that I have for myself, but you identify with them. So even as I go back, to me, it's very clear. And as I talk to the different folks that we have, and saying, look, you're looking for these dreams. You know, you're looking at this to Italy or to America, Germany. I'm one who had those dreams like you do, and as a little kid, I also was a boat person, you know. Mm. I made the crossing in 15 days, you know, they made it in 2 days, 1 day. So I'm a boat person too, and I've gone to America, I've done all the things you're dreaming about, and look where I am right now. I come back here, leave my family to talk to you about Jesus. Mm. You know, it's like, you understand what's going on, you know. It's like you sort of investing all your time in pursuit of your dreams. And at the end, this is where you end up, where I am.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing better than searching for that sweet peace you're looking for. And you're thinking it's going to be becoming an American, becoming an Italian, becoming something else, having money in your pocket, having a car, house, children, you know. And I'm telling you, you know, I'm coming back. I'm telling you, you know, this is where I'm at. And there's nothing better for me. You know, being with you right now, if I were to die, I'd be at peace. That's
wow.
And I really believe that. It's like it's not a story. It's like that's life. You know, so that helps me tremendously.
There's nothing preaches better than experience.
Yeah.
Vince, and you can look at them and say that.
We talked on Sunday. You know, I think I told you we're in the midst of a series on Sabbath, and it's part of a larger conversation. But one of the things we talk about that Sabbath is a response to is we have these gods called, you know, accumulation and accomplishment. And I hear that, you know, in even in your story, when you talk about what you were searching for and you kind of get to that point where you're like, wait, this is it.
Yeah.
This is what it is. But I feel like in some ways, and maybe even, I don't know, you could speak to this maybe better than us. This area uniquely has this undertow of, we need to accomplish more. We need to accumulate more, and that's sort of like the end goal. Have you seen that? Like when in all of your travels, does it feel like this area is even more that way, or is this just kind of like a human condition thing where we think that will satisfy?
I see it all over the place, and it's not. It's cross cultural, and it's a human condition, and. If you stay in your own culture, that is, if you're one culture, sort of historically in one culture, you're really at a great disadvantage. Mm. And you think this is what we've come up with, this is life. But then as you travel cross-culturally and you see different cultures, different ways of responding to life, you find out that there's different, almost like different ground rules, different principles, different things going on. And it really is just disturbing because it isn't just you, what you're thinking and where you are, but you're open to question yourself, you know, question your own principle, question your own sort of doctrine or and your own searching. So, but I see it across the board. I also do counseling. I'm also a counselor. And the same thing. I'm counseling folks overseas. Same issue. I'm counseling people in the States. And one person in the States I was counseling, and they're living together. And I said, they say Christians. And I said, what's stopping you from getting married? He goes, oh, you know, but Vince, we don't know about the Bible, if it's, you know, all these complexities and things with the Bible and things, but he was a Christian. He professes Christian. But as we're getting involved in his discussion, and you come to the center point, and what is it? If we would get married, she's divorced, she's getting alimony, she's getting support from her ex-husband, which is good money, you know, and if we get to marry, we would lose that money. Yeah, I'm thinking. I said, you know what to do? Why don't you do two columns, you know, following Jesus, what would it cost? And then by staying where you are, you know, what are you giving up? What's the price tag on this?
Your cost analysis on following Jesus.
You know, and then you should think about it, you know, cost analysis of, you know, what's cost Jesus, you know, and for your peace and tranquility and salvation. I mean, just put it down on paper, you know, put a sort of a price tag on it. You know, and I left him that way. He just I don't know what he did.
Oh, so you don't know how that started?
I don't know. I don't know how it ended. But that's so common. People, it's getting numbed. I don't know if it's something that we are subconscious. I don't just say it. If we are consciously distracted and we like it,
yeah.
Or we are we're not aware. Just on that, my butt is buzzing.
That's a cool trick. Oh, and I think a lot of it is like what we have talked about here is it's the water we swim in. You know, like if you are around something and you are immersed in something, we naturally kind of become like that which you're around.
Yeah.
And if everybody is searching, if everyone is going after accomplishment and accumulation, it just seems like, well, I guess that's what I'm going to do, you know?
Yeah. It's so easy to normalize that as just that's where we find meaning. Everyone else seems to be. And so we chase that, you know?
But I wonder, I mean, I came to a point of I couldn't accept it. I mean, am I not typical? I guess I'm not typical because I could not accept this is what life's about and this is what should make us happy. So
yeah.
Deal with your stress, anxiety along the way, but go for these things. I stopped.
Yeah,
I couldn't go forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but so if you're sort of drinking water or whatever that we're all drinking, and this is what life's about, and this is what your dreams are about. I mean, does it actually have peace with that?
Mm.
You know.
Yeah, maybe it numbs.
Yeah.
The angst, but I think you're right. I don't think it necessarily brings that
and
peace,
some
but
who would knowingly drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Oh, that scares the heck out of me.
Yeah.
When I think of that, people, they say, okay, so why would they do that? Well, then I guess the response could be is that because the deeper questions are more disturbing.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. They hit a little closer to home. It's easier just to drink the Kool-Aid. You know, Vince, what we right before we hit record, we were asking a question. I think I'd love for you to share your response to, but it's kind of like, you know, what would you tell someone who's skeptical about going all in for Jesus? Like, how would you respond? I think it's very similar to the conversation we've just been having, but what would you say?
Well, think through it. Is it worth it following Jesus or not? And, I'm one who made a very logical choice, along the Charles River. You know, I realized I was lost and I was going nowhere good. And this person was offering me sort of a life raft or life-saving word, and you look at that and say, you know, I have this, and I could have this. Let me try it. And you evaluate it. I truly came to Christ logically, intellectually. Initially, I was a Big Bang Theory sort of adherent, whatever. And at one point along that journey, you know, I it goes into another thing. It's a little too long, but what woke me out of this sort of this delusion or nightmare is walking out of my counselor's office at late at night in tears, realizing I'm desperately lost after listening to a conversation we had, and I couldn't identify with the person who was talking to the psychologist. It was me. That's when I hit the bottom.
Wow.
I thought, this guy's sick. And walking out and said, okay, let's meet next week about it. I remember looking up at the sky and seeing the Big Dipper. And it's like, here I am, a divine being. I didn't know his name. I didn't know what that meant, but I believed in a divine being. Even as a Catholic, I didn't know what God or Jesus. I just knew there was a divine being. And then I came to the Charles River, made the profession of faith. You know, so what would you tell somebody? The best person, I mean, who is truly saved? One who's hit the bottom and realizes they're lost.
Wow. It didn't work, whatever they were chasing.
That's right.
Yeah,
you know, Maslow's triangle, you know, pyramid. Matt, you hit the top in self-actualization, and now what's next? Nothing else.
Yeah.
You should be happy.
Yeah.
You're not happy. What are you going to do with it? Deal with it.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with it?
Yeah. Jesus is like, you know, one of the things I love about Jesus as a teacher is he's just so ruthlessly pragmatic. And so often he's like, if you want the praise of people, you can have that. You can get it. Go pray on the corners loudly and for everyone to hear.
Yeah.
He's like, but if you want the attention of the Lord, he's like, go pray in your closet. And I love what you're kind of saying is at some point we get to that place where we're like, play the story out. Like if you're chasing the senior engineering position, great. Pursue that. You'll get there. But what I love about your story, and I think what you communicate to so many of those refugees as well, is what you're chasing, you can find right now in Jesus. You don't have to get to the end of your rope, or at some point you do get to the end of your rope and then the Lord saves you. But it's, I love that kind of just practical play out what you're chasing. Does it really bring itself to true life? Because Jesus offers that.
And you know, that's right on. And that is the good news.
Yeah.
And that's the power of the good news.
Yeah.
No matter where you are, if you would truly understand it, all it needs is your assent. I believe, you know, and I purpose now to believe and walk that way. Help me, God.
Yeah.
You know, that's all you need. And things immediately will change. So you don't need any time.
Yeah.
In that moment, you go from death to life.
Yeah.
So you can carry this truth, this salvation in your pocket. I mean, in your words as you go apart. We are ambassadors for Christ. And what the word he gives us to share with others is be reconciled. You know? So I come into a point in my life with much clarity, what is my responsibility? And that is, I'm a missionary, you know, preaching the word of God. If they give me a place to preach, I'll preach, you know, the word of God, to counsel, to be with people. You know, so as I meet people, I could have an atheist and then try to encourage them, you know, to be open to God. And and then if a person's open, bring them to the point of receiving Christ. And as they're struggling or growing in their faith, help them, you know, mature in Christ. And if I have with pastors, fellow, you know, teachers and leaders, then you're encouraging one another. So it's like a continual progression, you know? So,
that's incredible.
Yeah.
It's good. I love that. Yeah. Vince, if someone wants to get involved with what you're doing, what would, if someone hears this and is like, how do I join or how do I figure out what he's, or find out what he's doing or what he's about and get on board with his projects? What would they do? What would you tell them?
Well, I think now you have the benefit. There's so many needs around the world and so many mission organizations that would love to have your body, you know, and I say body, you know, pulse, you know, a warm body, okay?
Yeah.
So there's all these open doors. You need to pray, you know. It's like, what do you want? Good. Really, it comes back to you. I mean, if you really have no inkling at all and you just sort of want to throw the dice, spin the bottle, throw the dice, and say, okay, Lord. Then you would go to Mission H and say, here I am. What do you do with me as you wish?
Yeah.
Okay, and they will, hey, well, great, you know.
Do we have a job for you? Yeah, yeah.
Right, right.
But as a mechanic in Sicily, is what it is.
Yeah. But if you think, as if, you know what, I've always been intrigued about India.
Yeah.
You know, and really, you know, it's like my house is in order. You know, I mean, whether it be your families, you know, your responsibilities, and you can actually start traveling. Whatever. I don't know what your situation is, but in that situation is going to determine what you can do, you know, because first you need to be responsible from where you are, okay? Then from there, you start moving out. So if you're a young person, dream. I dreamed the world, you know? I focused on Kenya, and here God sent me to Rome, okay? So the world is our playground, and till he comes back, enjoy, you know, enjoy God's goodness to us. People, the races, the cultures, you know, so there's no limit to it. Yeah. So start dreaming. And there's a lot of possibilities with our organization. You can come with us and do tours. If you like playing music, you're a musician, we have a music tour. We have people come on who sing, do mime, play instruments, and help with children's ministries. We have tours going around the world. Our tour came back from South Africa 2 weeks ago. We have a tour going on right now in the southeast of U.S. And then we have Peru coming up. We have South Africa again and other parts of the world in one. That's one aspect of the mission. The other one is come to Sicily and work with refugees. You know, if you basically are healthy, you can walk. Basically, you can walk. And your mind is clear. I'm thinking that. I was thinking about older people too, you know.
Yeah.
Your mind is clear.
Well, I went to thinking of all that pasta sauce you were talking about earlier. I may be healthy now, not afterwards, right, all that pasta. Right, but. Right.
You know, just come and be with us at our mission center in downtown Catania. Sit there and wait for foot traffic to come by. Or go out in the street, you know, get a cappuccino. And get something to drink or eat, and then look. Have your eyes looking out, you know, for people around you, you know, as you focus on refugees, and then you know, just walk over to them and start a conversation, you know, and in some ways find a way of giving your testimony, and you know, so you can do that even right now. Get your suitcase ready, and you can leave. I'm leaving in April, you know, just another couple of weeks, and so it could be that easy. Well, you can make it more difficult if you want.